This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to iFanboys Talksplode with Joshua Williamson.
Hey, babe. How you doing? Can I be a boy?
A pen at my side.
Hey, it's Josh from iFanboy, and I'm here today with another Josh. It's Joshua Williamson. I just mean to ask him. I think I just call him Josh. I'm not sure, but I don't ever call myself Joshua, so it's weird. Anyway, I've known Josh for a long time, and he's back on the show. I talked to him about 3.5-4 years ago when he was a little into The Flash, and now he's finished a 5-year run on The Flash, and he's headlining the Infinite Frontier event over at DC, and he's wrapping up Birthright, and he's a lot of comic book work. We catch up, we talk about career now, we talk about how things work, and it's always fun. This is Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Joshua Williamson again.
Yeah. It's been like 3 or 4 years.
It's been, let's see, the last one I put up was in October of 2017. So oh about God. 3.5 years, and honestly, it doesn't feel like it at all.
No.
There's more children in your life than there was then. Mine are much older, and I think that when we were talking before, it looks here like I noticed here I have a cover for Flash 24 up, I think we were kind of talking about like, hey, you're doing this now, so at double shipping, that's a year in.
Yeah, that was a year in. Well, I mean, technically, so I started working on it in November of 2015. Mm-hmm. So when 24 came out, that's about a year and a half in. But yeah, a year into the book by then. Yeah.
And it's interesting because I know that I have known you as the up and comer. I have known you as the newer guy at DC. And I think before you were, you were doing the work at DC. You're sort of a yeoman of that stuff. And now you're the veteran of this stuff.
Like, I know, it's so weird. I think it's very strange.
Does it feel like how do I feel about comics and a work in comics now compared to like 4 years ago? Do you think it's any different?
Like my work?
I don't know. I mean, like just sort of how you approach it. Like there's a time when you're young and you're like, I can't believe I'm working in comics. Then there's a time where like, I can't believe I'm making a living in comics. And then there's like, this is my life in comics. Like, do you think about it that way?
Yeah, I think about this all the time. I have all kinds of weird, I guess, opinions on it. It's like, I remember where I was 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, I was doing a little bit of stuff here and there. And I had done a few, like, small books at Image. I was just trying to, like, hustle at stuff. And I finished Bendis's class at PSU. So I'd done, like, a couple of little graphic novels. I had done a couple of, like, one-shots. I'd been, like, regularly working at DC doing, like, inventories and one-shots and stuff.
Yeah.
And then, and the reason why I'm bringing this up is because of how life can be so different and to what you're saying of like my thoughts on all this stuff, how weird things are. Because I remember 10 years ago, I had gone to Emerald City Comic Con, and that was Emerald City Comic Con where they had started talking to people, more people, I should say. They started talking to more people about New 52, but it hadn't been announced yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I think with New 52, some of the main books had already been, like, lined up, but a lot of the, I would say, like, half of it hadn't really been lined up by then. And so they started talking to people, and I had talked to them, but, like, I basically never got offered anything, but all my friends got offered books to go to New 52. And I was thinking about that today, about how crazy it is that was 10 years ago, because basically we're rounding out on the 10-year anniversary of New 52 this August, insane. Right? The last week of August. Which is weird because both Augusts were 5-week months both times. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, it's so crazy. And I was thinking about where I was in my career then and how frustrated I was and like, you know, trying to just grasp at everything and in a lot of ways being very desperate, trying to grab stuff. And now here I am where I'm like basically mapping out like an 18-month plan with DC Comics. Like I basically pitched them like an 18-month, 2-year plan of, you know, like the fact that I was talking to them in like September, October, November about Infinite Frontier of 2020. And part of that was like, okay, here are things we can do leading all the way until the end of 2022. It's like, it's very strange to me to be like how different those things are. And obviously a lot can happen in 10 years, but yeah, it's definitely super weird of like my career in comics and then my time at DC. Because, yeah, it's like Rebirth, which is 5 years ago. Jesus. And it's like I was just coming in and I hadn't worked at DC in like 3 years. So then I'm coming in doing Flash. And then 5 years later, now I'm doing like Infinite Frontier. It is, I do think about a lot of like who I am as a person, how I handle things. I'm much more opinionated now than before.
Do you think that comes from like the confidence of being like, well, I know what I'm doing. I know how these things work now as before. You just, I mean, I assume there's an element of like, well, I can't screw this up.
Yeah, I think I learned a lot in the 5 years, and then I also got really frustrated, and I think I still get frustrated sometimes, but some of it was like I think in the last year I like found my anger. I know that sounds really weird, but it's like I think sometimes confidence can come from a place of like not anger, but you just kind of like know what you want, I guess. It's like you know how you look at things, and some of that came from me being like, no, I don't want to do it that way, you know, or no, I guess like standing up for yourself, I guess that's part of what I'm saying, you know, it's like, and so a lot of that the last like year or two has kind of come in more for me. But yeah, like 5 years ago, I was just like so happy to just be doing Flash. Like I was just so like, and then I was so happy doing Flash. And then I've always been nosy when it comes to DC. Like I'm always, when I hear about something, like, if somebody mentions something in a conversation about a project, I'm always like, what is that? That sounds cool. What is that? Like, that's how I got Justice League versus Suicide Squad, because I would have these meetings with them and they'd be like, oh, eventually you're going to have to do a tie-in to this thing. Because at one point there were going to be tie-ins to it. And I was just like, what is that? What is that? What is that? What is that? I would always ask. And then one day they were in a meeting and they were just like, well, you keep asking about it. It's yours. I was like, oh, that's how that works? Great. So after that, I was always asking about stuff and just kind of being involved. And I'm really opinionated about things. And it took me a while to become more and more like, I guess, yeah, confident in sharing my opinions about stuff. And then eventually, I guess I see the math of DC in a way. Like, it's really interesting talking with editorial, other creators. This is part of why I work with Scott and James for so long, because we all see the math in very similar ways. Like with Scott Snyder and James Tynan, like we all see the math very similar, and then we all see the math very different at the same time. And so
when you're talking about the math, define that.
Man, I'm not sure how to define it. It's like,
I mean, like there's the economics of it. There's the timing. There's the,
yes, everything, economics, yeah. Timing, the structure of an event, the structure of a story, what we think works, what we like, what we want to do, but we know it doesn't always sell, what we know sells really well, but we might be apprehensive about, like, all of these things, like all of these pieces, you know, this big giant tapestry of it, all of the moving pieces, we can kind of see them in a way. I've heard from some people at DC that, you know, they get the three of us in a room and they listen to us and they don't understand the language we're speaking. Like, we just have our own little language of going back and forth. And it's like, and we'll argue with each other sometimes. Like, sometimes we don't agree on certain things, and then we start talking it out, and they're just like, what the fuck are they talking about? Like, but then we'll come out of it, and then either, like, what would happen was James and Scott and I would basically write up the documents about what we talked about. We would, like, go back and forth writing everything. James is much more verbose than both of us are, so he'll do a lot of the typing. And then me and Scott would go into a lot of the editing. Scott would do a whiteboard.
He was always really good. I've talked to you and Scott, and that's if he's more verbose, that's pretty impressive.
James?
Yeah.
When it comes to like writing a document,
right?
Like, it's interesting with we each see things in different ways, and we each have our own obsessions. Like, Scott is very, what is the movie poster? Like, how do I sell this if I'm making a movie poster? What is the big image that I can sell this on? Right? Like, he's very much like that. Mm-hmm. Both of us are like that, but then it's like I get very obsessed with what is the last page of your story? What are these big moments? What are the things you're going to talk about? What actually happens is the thing that I get obsessed with. Mm-hmm. Like, someone pitches me stuff, I'm like, that all sounds great, but what actually happens in the story? Like, what are those big moments that I'm going to remember? That's the stuff that I always get obsessed with. And then James gets, not obsessed, but he gets really in, like, the mythology of it. He's very much about character and balance, but he gets really interested in mythology of it. And then when it's time to, like, present it, Scott is very, like, here's my whiteboard, right? Like, he can draw out a whiteboard. I get very obsessed with the calendar. Like, how is this actually going to, like, work in terms of how it rolls out? And then James will write these, like, 20-page documents that I will sometimes turn into five. There was one time we had this document. Yeah, it was, like, it was pretty long. It was, like, 10 pages. And I was like, yo, dude, I'm really sorry, but I'm literally cutting the first 2 pages of this document. Like, we don't need any of this to present to them. It's, like, the first line on page 3 is the information they need. Like, it's good for us to know all that information, but when it comes to presenting the editorial and then they present to marketing and sales, they don't need to know all this backstory stuff. We just start here. But yeah, it's interesting, like, the math of stuff and where I feel like I am in my career and kind of looking back at stuff and then kind of figuring out what were the, I guess, how I've changed. I definitely changed as a writer over the years, and I've become more critical in places. Flash was interesting because it was like, like you were saying, Flash was double shipped, and I never wanted to miss a beat on it. Mm-hmm. But that basically meant I had to turn a script in the Flash every 2 weeks for like almost 5 years. And there were times where it was almost like being on a marathon, and you're running this marathon. And as you're running it, you start to figure out how you might run differently. You start to think about learning and how I would like apply some of these lessons, but you can't stop running to do it. Like, you can't get off the treadmill or the marathon to like take a deep breath for a minute, take a step back, and then jump back on having used what you've learned. You're in it. And so sometimes it was hard to like utilize things or change gears at times on that book.
Well, my question that I was thinking about it is that you know, you're working in that. I know that you came in with a plan, you know, to a certain extent, but you know, at what point does that diverge? And then how much does that get waylaid by the other stuff that's going on? Obviously, you know, things came in and out of Flash that you had to deal with. You know, I mean, I, and listen, I'm not going to make you go into detail, but you're like, well, I stand up for myself now more. And I'm like, I can imagine that would have happened sometimes on there, you know?
Yeah.
Is it always as stressful, or is it eventually like same shit, different day? Like, final, there's Dr. Manhattan. We'll move along.
It was always very stressful. Yeah. It's always stressful. It's a stressful job sometimes because there are so many moving pieces and there's so many people you deal with and there's a lot of things that are unknowns and sometimes things slip between the cracks. I never felt like same shit, different day about it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I did get stressed out about stuff, but yeah, with Flash, I mean, I wanted that book to be a book that felt connected to the entire DCU. But that meant, especially when I'm just like, I'm just the writer of The Flash. Like, I'm not dictating what's happening in all the other books. And there are times where obviously there are certain events that were coming or going, or certain events were, you know, taking a bit to come out. I had to pivot at times because of that. But at the same time, this is something I would say, and it's going to sound really odd, I guess. When things were quiet, like, when there were moments where everything was running on time and everything was running the way it was supposed to and it was just really quiet, that actually would freak me out.
Sure.
Like, I actually kind of like the chaos of it a little bit. I like the frantic nature of it. I mean, that's part of why I think I've worked on almost all their events since 2016. Like with metal and death metal, I was a consultant on both of those. Like I was a contracted consultant on both the events, and working on those and like No Justice and a few other things, and talking with, like, I would talk to Tom about Heroes in Crisis, obviously, at times, and all that stuff. I liked kind of the chaos that comes with trying to figure out all these different pieces. You know, it's like death metal had all these one shots, so did metal, and sometimes trying to make all those pieces work and then trying to make it work with the rest of the universe. Yeah, there were times I felt like I thrived in the chaos versus the days where it was really quiet. Like when everything was working, it was quiet, I would get like super anxious and be like, what is hiding? What is the problem that's on fire that I haven't seen yet?
Right.
That's how,
I mean, yeah. I think like, because I know what you're talking about. I think that exists in most work to a certain extent. It's like you don't really have time to find anything to worry about because you're solving your problem and then you know the next thing is going to go. And yeah, there's like, well, what's hidden? You don't even know how to slow down, which, I mean, let's not step over the parallels to the book that we're literally talking about. But you know, I think that that fits in there. I think I'm wondering if you're doing like a really long run on a book, you know, and you were there for 5 years, but effectively 10 years, you know, in comic book time. You know, like, did you have an idea in your head like, I want this to be a run, like did you have, you know, you're thinking, well, geez, Peter David on Hulk, or you know, Jeff Johns on Flash, or like a sort of idea that you wanted to pattern your, not story wise, but just sort of the impact of and the sort of way that a long run on a book like that works.
In the very beginning, I mean, Peter David's interesting because, you know, he was on Hulk for so long, and he, it's funny, he was on Hulk for a really long time. He, for whatever reason, my memory, I imagine he was on other books like Aquaman for longer, but he actually wasn't on Aquaman as long as I remembered him being. Like, in my brain, that's a long run, but it isn't that long when you think about, like, the Hulk run he did.
Yeah.
I think that, and then you look at, I mean, the obvious two were Mark Waid on Flash and then Jeff on Flash, and how they structured their stuff and how they did things. I did look at that stuff a lot, but it was also like, I knew it, you know, like I was a huge fan of both those runs. And so I knew how they did it. I knew how they teased things out and would roll some stuff out. And when I first got the job, I really only wanted to write 12 issues. My original plan was just for 12. Like, I went to them. I really like the structure of Hush. Like, I think Hush is a great example of what a lot of comics can be, where it's like, it's a self-contained story. Here's this thing. It's also greatest hits. Like, it has all the villains in it. He fights Superman, right? It has, like, a new villain with Hush. There's a lot of really big moments in those 12 issues. And I've always kind of pushed and talked to them about how I wish there was more of that, like just a greatest hits thing. Cause then it can sell forever. And don't get me wrong. It's Jeff Loeb and Jim Lee. So that's part of why it's going to sell forever. But the fact that Hush still sells, I think it's a good example of more of what we should be doing. And that was what I pitched them on. I was like, I just want to do a thing like Hush for the Flash. It's 12 issues long. And here's my whole plan. And originally the Speed Force Storm stuff wasn't even going to happen until like issue 5 or 6. And I knew when I pitched it, and they really liked it. At first, Dan was like, done, we're going to do a 12 issues, it's yours. Like, even if we have to do a 12 issue thing on the side, it's yours. It wasn't until Rebirth started coming together that I were like, no, this is, it's double shipping, it's your book. Like, you're going to have this book for this amount of time. They moved things around, so what was originally issue 6 became issue 1, and then it got extended, and we started talking it out. Once it started becoming more and more real, I had more and more ideas and more and more things I wanted to do. The first 8 issues plus the Rebirth issue were really structured, like talking with them about what we wanted that first arc to be. And once I got those first 8 issues like locked in terms of my outline, I started thinking about 9 and up a lot. And that's why when you read it, like the first 8 issues are really about the Speed Force Storm. We kind of seed some things. But then issue 9 is the one that is like, has Wally in it, has Wallace, and then it has all these like teases for these things that are going to happen in the book. Once I was there, I knew all the stuff I wanted to do. And so pretty much all 100 issues are kind of teased in that issue, in issue 9. And that's why. Like, by the time I was writing 9, I was like, I know what I want to do. I know how I want to do it. And I know what the ending is going to be. Like, I knew that Godspeed was going to get killed by Reverse Flash. I knew that it would come down to Reverse Flash and Barry. I knew we were going to introduce all these characters, but I had to. But then I did have to pivot. Like, obviously, there were things that kind of came at me as curveballs at times, and there were things that they wanted to do, like when they wanted to do the new forces and stuff like that. I had to kind of pivot around to include that, and yeah, it was a wild thing. But I think when I wrote issue 9, I knew the big pieces. I knew about Flash Year 1. I knew about the Turtle. I knew about Paradox. I knew all the stuff with Reverse Flash and bringing the families back. And then it was about fighting to get the family back and, like, constantly bugging them to let me have Bart and then letting me have Max and then Jesse and the book. And it was, like, these constant little even though I had a plan in my head, I was constantly negotiating, like, what I wanted to do because things were always moving around. I mean, I'm really thankful the sales maintained because the sales always sold above what they expected. That's what made me stay on. And actually, in the end, you know, it was my idea to leave when I did. And we talked about it a lot. And there was even a moment after I decided to leave where they were like, are you sure you want to leave? Like, do you want to come back? And I was like, yeah, this is it. This is the moment. This is the time to go. And these are my reasons for it. And it definitely was the time to go. But what I would like would so once I was able to put that away and all I was working on was wrapping up some stuff for Justice League with Death Metal, working on Death Metal, it allowed me to take a step back and look at, you know, all the stuff I wanted to do with DC and also some creator own stuff and start figuring things out of like being a different writer than I was on Flash and figuring out some different stuff of because my creator own stuff is so different from Flash. Like trying to find ways of bringing some of that into the books I was going to do after. So like with Robin and I'm writing 5 books for DC right now. And they're all very different. They're not all announced yet. Only 3 of them are announced. And they're all so different from each other. And I was able to figure some of those pieces out just because of that time on the Flash. Like, it was an interesting, like, experience. Like, I learned so much from doing it. And now I'm glad that I'm... That's part of why I was glad to put the end cap on it. Because then I can take a breath for a minute and then start utilizing all the stuff I learned.
Do you think... When you sort of, like, picture your career or who it is you want to be or how you want to be perceived... Do you tend to think it's better to do a lot of different types of things, or is that more of a creative impulse? Or do you think like, I want to have like a voice that if somebody sort of reads what is mine, they'll be like, oh, that's a Josh Williamson book.
Yeah. I'd rather have the voice. I think that's really? More. Yeah. I'd rather have the voice so we could be pinpointed. I think the creator I look at a lot is probably Brubaker. I think his career is one I was just talking to somebody about it yesterday that I look up to a lot is probably Brubaker. And he has such a distinctive voice. Sometimes he didn't though. I mean, you know, it's funny to go back. I've been rereading a lot of stuff from Marvel, particularly over the last like 20 years. And it's interesting to see where he would change at times and be a different writer. Like his X-Men was different from his Captain America. But yeah, I think Brubaker is one in terms of that, of like having a distinctive voice that I kind of look up to. And I mean, and some
is
of
it the now, voice or is it the way that he has the voice about him that you admire? Or is it both?
I mean, it's both.
Okay.
I think the way he's handled his career and it's just something I don't want to say look up to, but I guess look up to feels fair. I mean, look at Bendis and there's a few other creators I've looked at and I look at the work they do and obviously Bendis is one that, I mean, I was a student, you know, so it's like, he's something obviously I look up to and yeah, I don't know. I think it's better to have a voice than it's just to do a variety of projects. Like the stuff I'm doing at DC, it's kind of a fluke that I'm doing so many at the same time. It wasn't built that way. And I think they all have like little things in common with each other, but they're different. Cause like Infinite Frontier is written much more as like a quiet event, right? Like it's a big major story in the DCU, but it's told from a very grounded point of view. Because like the Zero issue is one thing, but the actual miniseries is going to be a little bit more grounded. And
let me ask you, I've lost track of a lot of the moving pieces of DC to a certain extent.
Tell me
what's the basic pitch for Infinite Horizon? And I wanted to say Frontier, but I know that's not right. There's been a lot of them.
No, it's Infinite Frontier.
It is. Jesus. Yeah, I knew I was, you know, actually earlier before I got on, I was like, I'm going to just have to warn him that I'm going to get those things mixed up. at okay. some point. No, because no, but you know, like there's a lot of infinites, there's frontiers, there's horizons, there's all, and I was like, I'm totally gonna say the wrong thing, and I just did. Anyway, go ahead.
So Infinite Frontier is basically the idea that after death metal, all of time and reality has finally been reset for the first time since 352, and everyone either remembers or is gradually going to remember what happened. And so now all the history, all those books, all those things you love are available. And now it's just about telling like the best stories moving forward. Like everything mattered, everything happened. Now it's just, there's a line in the sand and let's just start telling cool stuff. And you can kind of pick what you want to do to move forward and tell the best stories. It's all very connected still. Mm-hmm. It's still very connected, but now it's about moving this stuff forward. Yeah. So everyone is starting these new chapters. So in the Infinite Frontier Zero, it's really about all these characters kind of saying, okay, cool, this stuff happened to us. This is who we are now. Now I'm starting a new chapter of my life. That's what each one of those chapters was about in the book. But then at the ending, there's that reveal of Darkseid, and his thing is like, he basically is like, that's great that all of you are starting new chapters. But every time you start a new chapter, that's the, it brings you closer to the end of the book. And that's me. Like, I'm always the end of this book. It was always going to end with me, and I'm here. Like, it's time to end this. And that's sort of part of his whole thing. And then the book itself is going to be kind of about all these mysteries you set up in the DCU. It's tough because I don't much want to give away. But it's just characters. You're basically getting to see points of view of this current DC universe from different points of view, right? So you get Roy Harper, who came back from the dead. So it's his point of view on the new DCU. It's President Superman and his point of view. It's Alan Scott and his kids, Obsidian and Jade. It's Barry Allen. It's Chase, like Cameron Chase is in it, and so her point of view on the DCU. And there's a couple other characters, but we're basically telling a story about what the DCU is like now with all these characters and what it's like living in the DCU after all these events. Like, all these events have happened, it's been kind of nonstop, and we kind of slow down for a minute and let the characters kind of reflect on those events and kind of see what's actually happening. And they've all kind of gone through this, like, traumatic thing. And so they're kind of dealing with that and having a much more grounded point of view of what it's like to live in the DCU post crisis. Mm-hmm. Really, like, they just went through another crisis and now it's like, okay, we have to like deal with this now. And it's really interesting. It's like a very different kind of book. It's not as big as like death metal was, right? Like death metal is big explosions, you know, demons on motorcycles, this whole thing. And we wanted to kind of slow it down and not make it like that. We wanted to tell a more grounded story involving these characters. There's a scene where Director Bones tries to, he basically gets the DEO back, and he tries to get Cameron Chase to come work for him again. And they're at a restaurant. They're just like sitting in a restaurant and they're talking about it. And he kind of says to her, he's like, you know, do you remember when life was less weird? And she's like, you have a skull for a head. Like, and nobody in this restaurant's freaking out. Like, you noticed that yet? Like, nobody in this restaurant is staring at you. Nobody's freaking out about it because this has become their lives now. It's so commonplace. Like with superheroes and events and crises, all these things are happening. There's literally a man in this restaurant with a skull for a head. Nobody's even blinking at you. And he kind of is like, yeah, I don't think that's a good thing. Like, I think he says, or he's like, a being from another reality came here and messed with our time and space and almost destroyed the world. And she's like, yeah, which one? Like, which time? And he's like, that's what I'm saying to you. Like, that can't happen again. Like, we have to start taking steps. And he's like, I don't, like, he makes a comment about the multiverse. And she's like, well, the multiverse is mainstream. And he's like, I don't like that. I don't want the world to know that a multiverse is real. Like, the people on the street don't need to know about this stuff. Like, nobody should know about these things. And we got to find ways of putting some of these genies back in the bottle. And that's sort of what it's about, is about them kind of dealing with that. The idea of all of these things kind of pop. Big events and what life is actually like for these heroes and what life is like for people on the street and their perspective on some of these things. Like, do they believe in a multiverse? You know,
it's, you know, when you talk about it that way from that perspective, it's difficult for me not to see a metaphor to our larger world right now. Like, I'm not saying, obviously there's a thoughtfulness to it, but it's very direct in that way. And I think that if you're reading the book and sort of thinking that way, that's going to add something to it that might not be.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely in my mind. Yeah. That idea. That's definitely in my mind. Like, obviously,
this is crazy. This shouldn't be this crazy.
yeah, it should not be this crazy. And that's sort of what part of it is. I mean, there's all the other things that happen in it that kind of make it an event, you know. And there's much more, like, because, like, President Superman is in it, and he's investigating a conspiracy in the multiverse, and Barry is investigating what happened to the Quintessence, because they died at the end of Infinite Frontier, like the Spectre and Phantom Stranger and all those characters, they all died. And so he's investigating what happened at the same time. And then on Earth, you have all these characters kind of dealing with the fact that, like, reality was rewritten. Like, Jade is like, I lost, like, it's kind of like in the Marvel movies, like the Blip, you know, it's like Jade kind of had part of, she was erased from reality for almost 10 years. And now she's back and she's like, wait, what happened? Like,
you know what? I actually, like, I have a hard time keeping track, but I was going through number zero. I saw her and I was like, wait, has she been gone for a long time? It was one of those, like, wait, who is that? I remember this character. And then I realized it had just been, you know, I guess you're right. She was gone for a long time and I kind of forgot.
Since in the main DCU, yeah, she's been gone since Flashpoint. So that is something that they're dealing with, you know, and their lives are different, and what people remember and what they don't remember. And you know, Roy has survivor's guilt because he is alive and doesn't understand why he's the one that got brought back. Like, you know, there are other people that have passed away that didn't get to get come back. And here he is. And he's just Roy. And he goes on kind of this, like, hard traveling hero's adventure by himself to figure things out. But then, of course, gets involved in the bigger conspiracy that's going on. And there's action and explosions, I promise. There's all kinds of cool stuff that happens in it. But it's a very different kind of book. Like, I think it's, but that goes, what I'm saying is I'm trying to do things that were different than what I would normally do. When I finished Flash, the week that Flash came out, it was such a weird feeling because that was such a big part of my life for, you know, almost 5 years.
Yeah.
That the week it came out, I was in, like, a bad mood all week. And I'm sure it was because of Flash ending. I lied to myself at the time that it wasn't, but I'm sure it was. And I got on the phone with Marie, and she wasn't editor-in-chief yet. She was still just, like, the interim editor. And we started talking, and I was explaining my thoughts on a lot of different things. And you know, she was like, where are you at with stuff? Like, what's been greenlit? And I was like, okay, here are the projects that have been greenlit. These are things I'm talking about. But I was like, oh, I just want to do more. And she was like, I really think you need to do things that are unexpected. Like, there are obvious books that you could do, but do you really want to do that? Do you want to just do a book that feels like just the next, that feels like the next step on Flash, but just because it's the obvious one, not because it's one that, you know, you would be excited by or obsessed with? Because, like, if I'm obsessed with a project, that's the key. If I don't get obsessed with it, it's not going to work. So she was like, you got to figure some different stuff out. And so I was like, all right, well, let's start talking about some different ideas for different projects. And I ended up getting two books. Is that right? One, two. I feel like I'm missing something. Yeah. Two books came out of that conversation. And then we started talking about bigger plans and bigger ideas. And that's what led to a lot of Infinite Frontier stuff. And that's what led to me basically pitching them on, you know, here's my big crazy idea for the next 18 months. Like, that's what I was able to do. It all came from those conversations. And it's all things that I don't think will be expected. And then also, it's different. I'm doing them differently than The Flash. They're not going to read like The Flash did. I think they'll have still some of the stuff that Flash had in terms of, you can tell I love these characters. And I like working in a certain pacing with them. But, like, for example, with Flash, this is a really minor thing. I was talking to another writer about this week. The Flash has a ton of captions in it because it's The Flash. I remember asking Mark Waid about this when I first got the job, and he was like, yeah, because he's running all the time, and he's by himself. You got to have captions in a Flash book. And so I had all these captions. After I was done, I was like, I'm going to take a break from captions for a while. So it's like little things like that that to me feel different. Like, it's a different kind of challenge because I would use so much captions that now I'm not. Yeah, no, man, it's a weird time. It's really, I'm excited about all this stuff, but it's definitely different. And
the job has changed. I mean, in a way, you know, you were doing a regular book, and there was other things around it, but, you know, you're focused on sort of one thing, and now it's like, yeah, building the next. It's like moving. You know, like, you've.
Yeah, it was weird because I was thinking about this about some of the struggles I've had lately with keeping a schedule. Is that, like, with Flash, like I said before, it was like, no matter what, I knew every 2 weeks I had to turn an issue of Flash in. Like, no matter what, it was like always 2 weeks I got to turn the Flash in. And it kept me on like a linear path with that one character, right? Like I sit down, I know that character, I know his head, I know his story. You go, I can do this. Whereas in now, because I'm writing so many books, each week I have to switch gears to another book, another character, another head. And so it's made it harder at times.
It's like you're going from a monogamous relationship to like...
Yeah. Well, then also I got more involved, like I was saying, more involved with like the big picture of DC, because it was like, you know, over the last couple of years, I've been gathering more, just like talking with them and knowing a bit more about the way things work. And I can be, like I said before, I can be very opinionated. So I'm always like telling them all this stuff that I'm thinking about doing. And when they pitch me ideas, giving them like my honest opinion on it. And it got to a point where like, you know, some of the editors would come to me and pitch me other people's books just to kind of get my, you know, feel of it or my gauge on what I thought they were doing with that character. And now it's like talking to them about the events and bigger plans. It's a very different headspace than just being like, I can just write Flash. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm worrying about. And I'm not worrying about these other things, these other moving pieces. I'm just doing this one thing. But now I'm definitely, it's a very different, and it's a lot more work at times. It's a lot. But I love it though. Like I honestly love a lot of the stuff that's going on with them and watching editorial kind of get to stretch their own wings a bit and taking on projects that they love and being able to push some things differently, you know? Like I definitely think a lot of these books are going to be really fun and they're going to be different than what was there before. It's just isn't going to have the same kind of like, you know, with New 52, it was like, here's 52 books and they all come out in the same month. And then here's Rebirth, and it was all within 3 months because it was like June, July, August, right? Like here are all the books. With this one, there really isn't a thing of like they all have to come out in March. It's like just make the book, make it good, put it out when you need to put it out. Like let this artist have the time that they can do the whole thing themselves and not have a filler 2 issues in or something. It's like trying to let these books come out more naturally and find the right people and let it be fun. And not trying to like kill ourselves over the schedule, which we still do. And we're all hustling and losing our minds sometimes, but trying to make sure these things come out on time. But it's a different kind of thing than before. And I really like watching it kind of unroll like that. It's funny. I can feel sometimes, I'll get asked a lot of questions online where people want to know everything that's going on. They want to know it all right now. And I'm always like, well, I gotta be patient with some of this, but I also don't want to like blow up somebody else's surprise or talk about something way too early before it's ready to go.
That's not how the story should work anyway.
No,
it's a story.
That's a whole other weird thing, but yeah, go ahead.
I don't know how to phrase the question. So I'm going to go through my thought process and then you can comment on it. So I don't tend to plan these very much, but as I come closer to it with the you know the week or the day before, I start to think, well, what kind of things do I want to talk about? And what occurs to me, and we talked about this, you know, there's this continuum of like, you know, I've known you since you were breaking in, and now you're a different kind of person. So I tend to think, and I mean you're at a different part of your career. You know, I think if I'm you, you're probably thinking like, well, what's the next stage? What's the next thing I do? And I had the thought, I was like, I could see you as being one of those guys who becomes, you know, like an editor-in-chief type person, you know, the creative person who goes in, you know, the Paul Levitz role or something like that. And it's really interesting because some of the things you're talking about, you know, align with that. Like, so what is it, what do you think, like what, I don't mean like right now, but like going forward, like what do you, how do you envision, like how do you, where do you take a career from here? You're, you know, you're doing this big event, you've done these books for a while, you're not that old, like where do we move along in a career as sort of, as you hit the middle age of comics? Like, yeah, I know I'm thinking about it, it's a big question.
No, I think about this all the time, and I've talked to them about it, and I've talked to friends, and we've gotten these like long conversations about it. It's tough. I really want to do a few more things at DC. I'm not one of these people that is like, I have to write everything, like every character. There's a lot of characters I do want to write, but I have a set of goals and kind of things I want to do. I have a humongous list of creator art I want to do. You know, when we were talking about creators earlier, I look at Kirkman and what he's built with Skybound, and it's like and I, because I work with Skybound a lot, so I get kind of a different like insider view of that company and how great it is. And the people that work there that I'm friends with and I've spent time with, and it's like, I like a lot of what they do there, and I get sometimes like that is something I would want to do, running something of that level, right, and doing something like that. It's a lot of work too, but it's like, there's something really energetic about being in that building. I mean, same with DC, being in the building, but,
what's it like being in buildings? I don't remember anymore.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's so weird. It's such a strange thing. I miss our writers' rooms. I miss summits. I miss, you know, getting in a room with a whiteboard and actually working some of this stuff out. But, you know, it's funny you said that stuff. I mean, that is where I eventually see myself heading. Like, I can tell what I like. I can tell that I like kind of the more, not to say managerial, I like that part. And, you know, I like the tutorial part. Yeah, I like the pieces. I like looking at it all from a, you know, a higher point of view, looking down, moving pieces. I know that's where it'll head eventually. When that's going to be, I don't know. I've talked to a lot of people about this particular topic, and it's clearly where I'm going to eventually go. And I think anybody that knows me, like, you can just tell while we're talking, but, you know, all my friends, when we talk, they can tell that's kind of where it will eventually go. Where that's going to land, I don't know. But the challenge there is the create your own part. Like, at some point, I have to leave DC to focus on create your own. I have to. Like, you can tell Scott is obviously reprioritizing create your own, and he still has projects at DC, but it's like, he clearly has a lot of create your own stuff he's doing. And you can see how much priority James has on it, even though he's like burning the candle on both ends with Crayon and DC. I've mostly been focused on DC stuff a lot. And part of why I went to DC back in 2015 was all the Crayon books that I was slowly developing. I could tell pitching them to Image that they weren't as excited about them as they say, like Nailbiter, right? And then went to Skybound. One of the editors there who I'm friends with and we can have candid conversations with, I was pitching these books and he was just like, how is this better than Birthright? How is this better than Nailbiter or Ghosted? And, you know, how are you leveling up on these projects? And I would look at him and I'd be like, oh, yeah, he's right. You know, these things aren't better. And I started to feel burnt out on Create Your Own. And so I was like, I started, you know, that's when I started talking to DC again and got the flash. I remember when I signed the exclusive for DC in 2016, so 5 years ago, I was like, part of this is because I needed to spend some time away from Create Your Own to figure it out and figure out what I want to do and the kind of projects I want to do. And then within 6 months, I had a ton of new Create Your Own ideas. Mm-hmm. And since then, I basically have built this huge list of Create Your Own ideas. I've talked to a lot of artists and I've talked to people and I've built kind of this idea of what I want to do, and I've been able to kind of like take my time on it and think about some of these really big projects I want to do. And like Birthright's ending soon.
That was the next, I wanted to make sure we got that in I think you got three, right? You 50.
Well, I have one left to write, but right. Kind of, but so basically I have all this huge, like in my office, I have this whiteboard that is just for projects and where projects stand, right? It has a calendar on it, the whole thing. And the creator own section is ginormous. It takes up the majority of the whiteboard at this point. And it's like, I have all these things I want to do. And when I talk to Scott, particularly, because like James and I talk, he's balancing both, right? But with Scott, like the fact that he's working on so many creator own books and how happy he is, I tell him, I'm jealous. I tell him straight out, I'm like, oh my God, dude, like that's the stuff he's talking about is so cool. And the stuff I'm putting together, I'm really excited about. And some different ideas and different books, and some things are moving along different than others. The pandemic actually changed all my creator own plans because I had stuff I wanted to do this year into 2020 and in 2022. And because of the pandemic and because of all the stuff that was going on with the publishers, all of it basically got pushed back, like who knows when, like all of it got right. The button burner. And so I feel like I have to do that. Like, I have to do that creator own stuff. I have to do those books. I have to figure those things out. And some of them are just different ideas and formats and things like that. And I got to do them. And then once I do that, and however long that's going to take, then I could see myself saying, all right, it's time to basically go corporate, like, to sell out, you know. But like, I feel like it's time to make that decision. I mean, you look at someone like Mark Waid, who's done that, where it's like, you know, he was working at Boom for a bit. I think his title was, I think he was editor-in-chief of Boom for a bit, right? And now
he was a bunch of things, but he was definitely editor-in-chief for a little while.
Yeah, and now he's publisher for Humanoids. And it's like, I definitely see myself eventually taking that kind of path. It's just a matter of when. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
And you know, who knows what comics are going to look like. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that.
No, but I mean, I look at this stuff too. I mean, I'm very looking at how comics has changed this last year, particularly, and the direction things are going, and trying to figure out some of this math, and trying to figure out, you know, which way the wind is going to blow, and yeah, trying to figure out some of this stuff. And it's really interesting. I don't know. It's fascinating to see how things are changing in our industry. And I think a lot of it's for the better. Like, it's really cool. I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff coming, I feel like. But with Birthright, yeah. So Birthright, I had to write issue 50, but I essentially have had that issue in my head since the beginning. And so I have the notebook. I have the page breaks already done. It's a matter of me sitting down and finishing it. I have to finish it next week. So it's going to be kind of weird to finish.
Do you have a hard time with final issues in general, or is this sort of different or special?
This one's definitely special.
I don't even mean a hard time, like, is it hard, but there's an emotional component to it that's like, oh, you know.
Well, with Flash, I didn't have a hard time writing the last two issues of Flash, or writing that arc, or writing Speed Metal, all that. I did not have a hard time writing it. I only got, like I said before, frustrated or whatever I was going through that week it came out. I didn't have a problem writing it. Writing it, I knew what I do. Well, part of it is, dude, you're under the gun because artists got to draw.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're just like, I can't sit on this thing for a week or two. I gotta do it. And so, particularly with like the Flash stuff, because Eddie Burroughs needed, I finished Speed Metal. It came out the same week, but that was like kind of the epilogue ending. I finished Speed Metal, I don't know, man, like maybe 2 months before I finished the last two issues of my actual Flash run. But I had to write those early because they were going to be drawn by Howard. So it was like, it was a weird thing of like, these things just have to get done. I don't have time to think about the milestone of ending it, you know? With Birthright, I've had a lot more time to think about Birthright. And I don't know how I'm going to feel writing it, because I know the ending so well. Like, I know how the whole last sequence of it is. There's a part kind of in the middle slash the beginning that has kind of changed a few times, like how I think about how I present it. But what happens has never changed. What happens has basically been the same the entire time. Like, 50's never changed. There's little bits and pieces. The last whole arc is called Epilogues. Each issue is a standalone, right? So it's like each issue is like, you know, me wrapping up something. And the only thing that changed in those was there's a character in Birthright named Boomer who's a military guy who was created later because they needed someone to basically be a voice for the government, but was also kind of a villain. And then I really liked writing him, and eventually became like a major part of the supporting cast. And so the biggest change is him, like his involvement, his perspective on stuff. The issue that came out, I think it came out this week, is all from his perspective. That was never planned. Mm-hmm. Him being a werewolf, all that stuff, that all came organically as we were writing it. Like, I remember writing the issue where he was going to go up against the monsters, and Andre, who loves werewolves, it's like his favorite thing in the world are werewolves. He was always asking me for werewolves, and I was like, not only will I give you werewolves, I will give you like a bunch of werewolves. Like, we'll have this issue with monsters, we'll have an issue where werewolves invade the camp and they bite Boomer, and then later on Boomer will become a vampire, or a werewolf, and we will use that as part of the story. Like, all of that came about because of Andre's love of werewolves and me just really liking this character and liking writing him. So that was probably the biggest change in terms of like the original plan. There's all kinds of little things, like little tiny stuff, but issue 50, the final issue, has never changed. There's a part where Mikey kind of reflects on the things in his life in that current moment, and it's like a two-page sequence of just cuts to different parts of his story or the different people that he's met along the way kind of thing. So that part's changed because it's reflecting of all the different stuff that happened of all these characters. But yeah, like the whole thing. Oh, actually, there's a major thing that changed in the ending that came about. I don't know if it was because of me growing as a creator, growing as a person, but I realized something that was wrong with the very end, the whole last sequence. And I was like, I need to change that. It was like one, it's hard to explain without giving it away, but it was something that I realized I was doing wrong. I was leaving something out that needed to be there. And I was like, I'm going to change that part. So that changed, but not really. I don't know.
That's your longest creator-owned series. Right? I feel like I've been living with that book for a long time and reading it monthly as it's been coming out. So like that's as major an achievement as The Flash in its way.
Yeah. Oh, a creator-owned book goes 50 issues? I was talking about this with my wife. Crazy. I can be very hard on myself at times, and I can go back and forth between being unsatisfied as a creator and then reflecting on, you know, because I have moments of like being really hard on myself of like what I'm doing, where I'm at or whatever. And then sometimes thinking a lot about what I want to do and, you know, pushing myself to do the kind of work that I want to do and having moments of like, oh, this isn't working. I got to push harder. And then having moments of like, yeah, but I have 50 issues of this book. I never thought I would get this. And that's an accomplishment. And my wife was like laughing at me and she's like, this is so weird. Like in the same breath, you're just like, oh, I'm happy with this thing. I need to do better, blah, blah, blah. And the next breath, you're like, okay, I did okay. Like, this thing is an accomplishment.
Well, the other thing is I think that if you look at, I don't know, when did that book start? Like, when did you?
Started in 2014.
Okay, so it's 14. Yeah. That's sort of the tail end middle of that last big Image boom that happened. And
that was like the tail end, yeah.
So many of those books from that era didn't finish. You know, they disappeared, and I think that, you know, you've got Skybound, so you have somewhat of a structure behind it, but you don't finish that kind of book unless you are into it. Like, it just doesn't happen. I mean, even people who love their books, they couldn't find the way, but you know, it kept coming. There was breaks and things like that, but
That's all because of me mostly, and then a little bit of Andre, but mostly
which is fair. I mean, I think that as a creator own thing, but you know. So many of those books from that era just stopped, you know, for one reason or another, and that's always such a bummer. And I, you know, you know, and obviously, like people, there are reasons. It's not like the thing where the guy's like, oh, I just started playing video games too much and didn't finish it. It's not that, but you finished it. No, I know, but I know, but that's not that.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this today. I was like, you know, I remember. Early on, and it's still something I hear when people give advice to people trying to break in, and I would give this advice too. One of the pieces of advice I always hear was like, never pitch your like 50 issue epic fantasy story. And
I think I've given that advice.
Yeah, somehow I made it. Like I remember when I pitched it, I think I had written Ghosted number 5. And I had written five, and I was talking to different publishers about creator-owned stuff. This is in 2013. I was like, we were gearing up to announce Ghosted. Ghosted was going to get announced. I think it, Ghosted had already been announced. Ghosted had been announced, or was like right about to be announced, I think. And I went to WonderCon. And I was walking around the convention room floor with Sean Makowitz, who's, I think his title is editor-in-chief. He might be executive editor, like vice president, executive editor of Skybound. At the time, he was just editor. And he and I were just walking around, just like shooting the shit at WonderCon, walking the floor. And we walked by one of those like big, you know, like Midtown, I think, will have those booths with just like a bunch of books. And we were talking about Nailbiter. And we had had this whole thing about Nailbiter and a couple other creator-owned things I was talking about. And then I was like, oh, there's this book I want to do. It's a fantasy thing. And he's like, what is it? And I'm like, oh, well. And I wasn't in that zone to pitch. But I was just like, well, here's what it is. So it was a different kind of pitch because I wasn't pitching. You know, you get in front of a presentation, you have to do your pitch, your little like pitch version of yourself, you know, where you're on and you do the whole thing.
Your show.
Uh, like the fast one-liners and stuff like that. I the high concept pitch, I didn't have that. I was just like, oh, it's this thing. And I kind of explained what it was and the twist and all the stuff I was thinking about. And he was like, oh, that sounds cool. I was like, yeah, yeah. He's like, you should like pitch that to us sometime. And I was like, yeah, I have one pager. I'll send it to you. And I did. And then I remember I was taking a nap. I was in the middle of a nap and I got a phone call and it was Sean. He was like, we really love it. We want to do it. Here's the offer. I remember like very like quickly scrambling and writing the offer down and then being like, okay, I like this. I like this. I like this. And then I actually flew down there and spent some time. I went to DC for a day. Yeah, I went to DC for a day. I think that's right. And then I went, and that was just because I knew people there. I wasn't working on anything at DC at the time. I just knew people that worked there. And then I went to Skybound for 2 days, and we just talked it all out, and I was able to do it. And I remember thinking, like, this is crazy. I don't, like, do you really think we're going to do a book that's, like, 50 issues long? and they were like, yeah, we can make this work. And they made it work. I mean, it's the same creative team the whole way through. It's the same,
yeah,
you know, artist, colorist, letter. Like, everything is exactly the same all the way through. And Sean's edited it the whole time.
That's the goal. I mean, let's say if you grew up, you know, reading those Vertigo comics in the 90s, like those sort of 50, oh, yeah, 60 issue, great. Like that's the thing.
Yeah, to be able to do a book where you get to tell this big beginning, middle, and end. And I remember always looking, because I worked at a comic book store through high school and college and stuff, and so you start seeing these books that always have 10 trades, right? Like Vertigo seemed like, you know, I actually don't know how many trades Preacher has, but it has, you know, it is 10? Yep. Okay.
No, it's 9. It's 9.
It's 9, because they have the 5 really nice hardcovers. I have those in my office. But it's like all these books have these longer runs, right? Like you were talking about, and that was never something I set out to do necessarily. Mm-hmm. I thought that was always cool, and I thought that was a good goal to have in terms of like the big picture of like the economics of comics and sort of what you're looking to do. And also, this like sounds silly, but when you talk to libraries and talk to book buyers for bookstores and stuff, and they like stuff like that, and so having that be kind of like, that was never necessarily my goal, but to have that now with Birthright, it's crazy. Like I love that book. I mean, it's probably the most, it's the hardest book I write, because it's the most detailed continuity mythology, and it's also the most personal to me.
That reads.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you get that last issue, it's really all about me. Like, in a lot of ways, Mikey is kind of speaking my thoughts on a lot of things about my life, and how different things are now versus when the book started and where I was when I initially had the idea for the book. I had the idea for the book in 2007. So it's been definitely a long journey for that book and what it is now versus what it was then. Like, it's definitely gone through a lot of changes, and like, but at the same time,
as have you.
Yeah. As have I. And that's what a lot of, I mean, the book is about how your life can change. I mean, it's about family and fantasy, but at the end of the day, it's about how your life can change on you, and how sometimes you have to pivot, and sometimes life doesn't work out the way you thought it was going to, but that isn't necessarily a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And how you have these. So I think sometimes we have 3 different kinds of memories. You have past, present, but you also have future, because you start to envision what you think your future is going to be. And sometimes you think about it enough, those memories become kind of imprinted on you, right? You have this vision of what you think your future is going to be, and you become attached to that. And sometimes when it changes, it's hard to let go of that memory. It's hard to let go of that vision of what you thought your life was going to be like, or who you're going to spend it with, or what you're going to do with it, and the friendships, the loves, all of it. You have this idea of what you think your life is going to be, and it's hard to let that go and to start going a different path. And that's what it is. It's like Mikey as a kid, his family, and knowing that, you know, they had this idea what their life was going to be like. And then when Mikey was taken, and that changed it. And then now they have a vision of what they think their life is going to be. And it's this tragic thing. And then Mikey comes back, and now it's something completely different. But so is Mikey. Like, Mikey was dealing with that as a kid too, of like, and he's a little kid, but it's like, he had his own goals and things he wanted to do with his life, and that all got taken away. But even when he was in Terranos, he had moments of, this is my life forever. I'm never going to see my parents again. I'm never going to see my family again. This is my life forever. And my life is forever war in a fantasy world where I'm going to forever be trying to defeat this guy, defeat Lore. And then it changed on him again. And it's like, that's sort of what the book is about all those ideas. And Mikey kind of reflects on all those things in the last issue.
It's funny. That's my, if somebody asks my one parenting advice, which parenting advice is awful and you should almost never accept it from anybody because nobody has any clue. But the one thing, my mental health of it is like, have very few expectations about what you think is going to happen or what you want to happen, because you have no, and it's just the way that, you know, you sort of described that, it made me think of that thing. And it's just like, you know, those expectations kill you. Like, because
well, that's to go bring all the way back to the beginning of this conversation, and then we can wrap it up.
I was like, this is I know. As a storyteller, I was like, well, I think we found a spot.
So when you go back to what I was telling you about 2010 and what I thought my life was going to be in 2010, where I was in my life in 2010, I had all of these expectations and I had this envisioned what I thought my life was going to be. This is where Birthright came into play. It was because in 2010, I had this kind of, I knew what the book was 2007, but then 2010, 2011, really 2011, my life went through a lot of changes at once. And, cause I went through a divorce and all these things, I moved, like all this stuff kind of came up at the same time. And so I had this idea what I thought my life was going to be, and then it changed. And then I finally started working at DC, and then that didn't really work out the first time around. Like, when I was doing stuff for them between the years of 2010, 2012, a lot of people don't know that. Like, they forget that I was doing work for DC at that time. And it just didn't work out. And it was such a weird feeling to be like, I love DC Comics, and it's a company I like, and I like the characters. And to have my foot in the door and then to not have my foot in the door was such a weird feeling, to be like, oh, was that it? Like, that was my moment to work there, and now I'm not working there. And all of that stuff was such a weird thing of just like thinking about, oh, this is where my life's going to be, this is where my life's going to go, and what I'm going to do. And then having the rug taken out from underneath me. A lot of that went into my feelings on Birthright and writing those characters and what they were going through. And that's why now I'm here now. I'm like, God, this is so weird. It's like, that's why it is. Like, so much of my experiences are reflected through Mikey, because it's like, you know, Mikey has, you know, Raya, his wife and the family and the things that are going on there. And then, you know, spoilers, it's happy ending, but it's like the stuff that's going to happen there. And it's like, not to say that I should automatically call my life a happy ending, because it's far from over, but, you know, I'm happy now. And it's like all the stuff that's here. And I, you know, I get to work at DC Comics and I get to make these books. I get to make these creator owned books. I got to do 50 issues of Birthright. So with my wife and kids are terrific, you know, so it's like, it is such a interesting thing when I sit down and start to get into it.
Well, yeah, it was like, yeah. I think you said it. I think you said, I was like, I have nothing to add. That will be helpful to this. But what's interesting is that, you know, I've known you for a long time now and I'm not surprised at any of that. I think is what I'm getting. I mean, you approach comics with a purpose, with a serious, you know, like, this is, I'm going to make this into my career. And you know, we both know that takes a really long time and you're going to have those setbacks, you know, and when you think, Jesus, I'm out at DC, what happens now, you know, to have the wherewithal to, you know, be able to keep moving and then have it come back around. I think it's a lesson, but it's a lesson that we can deal with, but it's almost like the lesson is not, hey, you got to stick with it, but like, you have to be able to stick with it, which is a different thing.
We all have to be able to pivot.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to go pivot and move and be able to be smart about it and try to figure out what it is you're doing. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today. This is more of a breaking in conversation, but I was thinking about how often I see this for people breaking in or people who have broken or are struggling. And it's like, sometimes I just think like, just being there is enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, just showing up and saying, look, I made a comic book, hire me, isn't enough. I know people, that's like a thing people say sometimes, but it's like, it's so much more complicated than that. And that is something I had to learn. I had to learn that. Like, I thought that for a while. There was an editor at Marvel who kind of, I remember being like, you know me, you know the work I can do. You should hire me. Like, look, I can make comics. And you, and he was like, yeah, and there's a lot of people that can do that. Like, oh, what else can you bring to the table? And I remember that, like, blew my mind. Like, I know what I'm, the way I'm explaining it to you now sounds very, like, small, but it was a much longer conversation.
I totally understand that. And I think that that kind of thing is the thing that changes your perspective on everything. It's really easy to for that to happen really quick. You know, like, I've worked in self-publishing for a long time. I'm not the self-publisher, but I work with them. And, you know, I know lots of people who make comics, and there's a part of me that, you know, I wanted to make comics for a while, and I thought, you know what? I don't know that that's my aptitude. And it's not the making comics part. It's not the writing part. It's the other bits, which is fine. Oh. I'm totally at peace with that. But the hard part is not making the book. And that part is really hard. Like, it's... the hard part is like everything that comes after that and what you do. And I don't think people are prepared for that, because I almost think you can't know.
Yeah, you have to. It's very strange. Yeah. I wish it was that easy. I mean, I learned this for a while where I'm like, half my day is working on comics and the other half of my day is the business of comics.
Yeah.
Like, easily. I mean, I probably write like maybe 6 hours a day. Right, of actual like sitting on writing, but then I'm on the phone a lot and I'm doing other stuff. Like, it's a lot of stuff. And like you and I were talking about before we started recording, like going to conventions, like it's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of stuff you got to do, that it's more than just sitting down and just start typing, you know. Just it's so much more than that. And yeah, no, man, it's crazy. But you know, I'll catch you too later.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm really glad that you reached out. I'm glad we got a chance to talk again.
Yeah, it's been so long. I mean, it was funny. I was trying to figure this out. When did we meet? Do you want to hear that one?
I mean, it had to be. When was your first? When was your first DC book? I feel like it was a Robin book.
No. Oh, yeah. So when I had that come out, it was the Robin Supergirl issue of Batman Superman or Superman Batman. That was 2010 when that came out.
Okay, it was definitely before that.
It was before that,
and
yeah.
Because you had done the Oni books, the kids' books, the vampire, the...
Okay, so I had done the Image, like the kids' books. Yes. I had done them by the time I met you. Okay, so it was probably like 2008, 2009.
That's probably it. That's when I started doing shows like really...
Well, you were at San Diego. Yeah, I walked up to you at San Diego.
Yeah.
At DC booth.
Yes. That was the best place in the world back then.
I know. Dude, I miss that booth. I miss it. That the booth carpet. Was... But it's changed so much. Oh, the carpet, yeah. it's crazy to think about how much that DC booth has changed over the last, like, you know, I've been going since I was a kid, so it's changed a lot. But anyway, it was good. I'm glad we had to talk about stuff. It wasn't just me just hyping books for an hour.
Good. All right, me too. And that's all for another episode of Talksplode. Thanks to Josh for coming on the show and spending time and talking to me. And thanks to the iFanboy patrons who unlocked the Talksplode shows and the Booksplode shows and the Mediasplode shows. You can see that splode pattern that's going on there. You can go over to ifanboy.com and find all that stuff that's there. You can follow Josh Williamson at Williamson_Josh on Twitter. And that is all. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you later. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way.
aware why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.